On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we draft all 30 Major League Baseball teams based on their lineups. It's the lineup draft. We're trying to guess which teams are going to score the most runs in 2026. And that is the bulk of this episode. Plus, we discuss the Cardinals extending Ollie Marmol through 2028 to be their manager, as well as Shohei Ohtani, who is in Japan. And there have been a couple videos of him in Japan, believe it or not. So all that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world less offensive than the 2025 Pittsburgh Pirates. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And maybe the Buccos were just being PC.
Yes. We do our best to make sure we're never saying anything that's going to get us in trouble on this podcast. And yeah, maybe that was the goal of the Pittsburgh Pirates last year, but maybe not this year, as the Buccos seek to be far more offensive. They want way more people watching them and being like, oh my God, how could you possibly score more than three runs a game? Welcome, friends, to the first edition of an exercise that I am very much looking forward to. It is Monday. We are recording this on Sunday night, but we wanted to come up with a few different structures to preview this here 2026 baseball season. And one way that we thought to do that would be to focus on the lineups around baseball, focus on the teams and how they're going to attempt to score runs, which is how you generally win the baseball game. Also prevent runs. We're going to get to that later this week. But this episode, we are going to effectively rank all of the offenses in baseball by drafting them. We've created a little bit of a game, and that is going to be our opener and most of our show. Let's get to it.
There are many different ways to evaluate offenses: home runs, WRC plus, OPS plus, OPS, batting average with runners in scoring position, height, I guess. But what we're going to do here is simple: runs. Runs are not the name of the game. The name of the game is baseball. But no other sport, I guess cricket, has runs. We have runs, this sport. They all have points or goals. We have runs. Mm. So that's how this is going to work. It is very simple. We will go back and forth, and we will pick a 2026 lineup. And at the end of the season, we will add my 15 teams together, and Jordan will add his 15 teams together, and whichever of us has more runs wins.
Scoreboard, as they call it. And we are going to do this exercise for the pitchers later this week, where we will be trying to avoid the runs at all cost.
Mm.
But we wanted to keep this simple, right? Because as you mentioned, there's a lot of ways you can evaluate. Oh, you park adjust. You say, oh, actually, their ex-woba tells me that really the quality of these hitters is better. No, let's keep this simple. Partially because for the purposes of us tracking this during the season, it's going to be way easier for us to just add up all the team's runs than it would be to calculate whatever park-adjusted stat they have. And this is simple, though. I mean, generally, the better teams are scoring more runs than the bad teams. And so I think this is going to be a fun way to think about offense going into 2026. Are there any other caveats that we need to present? I know. Yeah, go ahead.
I think it is just worth noting. Do you know who the top four teams were in runs in 2025? They were the last four teams. That is not true. Apologies to the Seattle Mariners. I forgot about that.
I don't think they were top four. They were close, nope. But not quite.
It was Yankees, Dodgers, Brewers, Blue Jays. So three of the top four, three of the final four teams were the top four of runs scored. Therefore, it is important. Yeah. Jordan, would you like to pick first, or would you like to kick me the rock? You're older, so you get to choose.
Well, to your point about the Mariners, right? We do still want to take into consideration where these teams play. I think that is going to be an interesting part of this, certainly as we get farther down, because I think the Mariners have a good offense. We'll see where the Rockies end up going. But, you know, the Mariners, I think they got a pretty good lineup, but they're playing half their games in a place where it's not easy to score runs. So that is something that I'm sure we will both keep in mind as we move forward. But as you mentioned, I am older. I am turning 31 here terrifyingly soon. And so for my birthday, I would like you to have the first pick, my friend. So go ahead. Go ahead. Start us off with the lineup draft. Who goes number one? Who's coming off the board first?
I think there are two correct answers at number one, and they are the two teams that finished 1-2 a year ago, the Yankees and the Dodgers. And I'm going to pick the Los Angeles Dodgers. I think the Dodgers are more likely to not finish seventh than the Yankees. Maybe the Dodgers don't finish first. It is impossible to conceive of them finishing outside the top five in runs scored. Their lineup last year was incredible. They had the second most runs scored in baseball. If you want to go by whatever metric, WRC plus, war, money, you know, they were number two behind the Yankees in most categories. And then what did they do? They added Kyle Tucker to that lineup. So it's pretty simple. I mean, I need to explain it more than Shohei Ohtani's on the team. Mookie Betts said he's back. He said he's back recently. He said he's never felt this good in the batting cage in a long time. So that will happen.
Yeah. No, it's a good, I don't think we need to elaborate anymore. I do think the only risk is that they are old, much like the team that you referred to as the candidate to go second, and the team that I am going to just take second and just keep it simple, mostly because I do think it opens up a lot more after that. And so I am going to take the Yankees. I do think just having Aaron Judge is really nice, knowing that essentially the exact same team is back that scored all those runs last year. I think they'll probably be slightly worse, but I also think that the floor is quite high. And I think that, you know, both of these teams kind of have similar risks where the depth is a little bit troubling if you do have a serious injury at the top to any of those top older guys. And that's why I also would have definitely taken the Dodgers first instead of the Yankees. But I'm going to take the Yankees because they are a proven offensive juggernaut basically every season. And I'll have harder decisions later in this draft, and I'm going to keep it simple and I will take the Yankees. So go ahead.
Speaking of hard decisions, it's my turn to pick. There's quite a fall off after the top two, and I think there's a bunch of different directions you can go at this pick. And I'm going to select... I'm going to select the Oakland...
This is going to be...
Formerly A's.
The who?
I'm going to take the Sacramento... The Sacramento, Yolo County, Oakland, Las Vegas A's.
Wow.
And I think there are a couple different reasons, but the ballpark is certainly a factor for me here. I just, the rock flies in Yolo County. I think Nick Kurtz has, in a small sample, proven himself to be an elite hitter. And it's not just him. It's Jacob Wilson. It's Lawrence Butler. It's Tyler Soderstrom. It's Brent Rooker. It's Shea Langeliers, who might be one of the more underrated players in baseball. I just think these guys are young and they're good. And I feel comfortable with them finishing like in the top five. And I don't feel good about anybody else. And so I'm going to take the A's.
So if people are saying, this is what an outrageous selection. Fangraphs and Pacoda, which is a projection systems that I'm going to reference a lot during this episode, as I did some amount of preparation here.
Me too.
They both have the A's in the top five for runs scored this year. So this is not an outrageous pick in that respect. What I picked, I was hoping to get him for sure. I didn't think you would pull the trigger this quickly. So it's a little bit disappointing. All right, but I love it. I love it. It's bold for sure. And shouts out to Sutter Health Ballpark that is going to determine whether or not this is correct. With my pick, I'm also going to go with one I just feel like is a safe selection. They scored a lot of runs last year. I think they're going to score a lot of runs this year. I'm going to go with the Cubs. I'm going to go with the Chicago Cubs. I think their ceiling is maybe a little bit lower than some of these other teams that we're about to talk about. But this is just one I want to lock in. They were fifth in runs scored last year. And I know you're swapping in Bregman for Tucker. Maybe Tucker is the better hitter overall, but I still like a lot of what they have, especially guys that like don't really get injured. You know what you're getting. So again, I don't think as much upside as some of the other ones that we could take here, But I did want to get the Cubs on my team. So I'm just going to take the Cubs here, even if maybe they don't finish fourth in run scored. So there you go.
Man, it's really interesting how I don't feel comfortable taking anybody right now. Because all the offenses look good, and then you get to the seven hole, and you're like, ooh. I'm going to take the Mets.
Okay, I figured that they'd probably go higher than a lot of people expected. They're in the group of teams in my wild card, definitely big upside, but we have no idea what this is. This is the opposite of the Cubs pick in a lot of respects.
I get that, but on the flip side, the Mets offense, even as they fell apart down the stretch, was amazing. I believe from August 1 to the end of the year, they scored, if not the most runs, then easily in the top three in all of baseball. And I am going to bank on Juan Soto being as consistent as anybody. I'm going to bank on Bo Bichette, when healthy, being as consistent as anybody. Those two with Lindor at the top of the lineup is as good as it gets. I'm as irrationally high on Carson Bench. I think Francisco Alvarez was playing through stuff last season, and if he's healthy, he can be a real difference maker. And then I'm buying Brett Beatty as a regular everyday player. And I think that for everything that happened last year with the Mets, we kind of forgot that Soto offensively was what he was supposed to be.
Yeah. No, I mean, Soto for sure. But otherwise, I mean, Pete Alonso ain't there anymore. He's a big part of that second half. Nimmo, I guess this is a totally different team. So I think that the upside is there for them to be just as good, if not better, but just so much more risk involved that I was going to struggle to take the Mets too quickly here. But they could just be a top three offense in baseball for sure. I mean, Soto's going to give you that. And I love Bo, sure. But I don't know. That's kind of terrifying. All right. I am going to take the Atlanta Braves. I'll do it. The Braves were a disaster last year. And guess what?
They were still
top half in runs scored. And I just think that there's just absolutely no chance they're anywhere near this bad. And the projection systems had them as a top five offense, which I'm sure they did last year too, right? So I'm just assuming not everything could possibly go this wrong again. I am wearing my Rome Emperor's hat today in honor of this early Braves selection. And I am terrified as to what is going on with them on the mound. And when we draft the pitching staffs, I think it's going to be a lot different. But as for the offense, even if some questions about the trajectory of an Austin Riley and an Aussie, whatever, I like the Yaz signing. Profar's a good hitter. Acuna's a beast. Olsen, you know, we know what you're getting from him. So, again, kind of a floor-raising pick, but this team should be so much better than it was last year, at least on offense. I'm taking the Braves here and feeling quite good about it.
I'm going to take the Arizona Diamondbacks next. The Diamondbacks.
They were.
As your next pick. The Diamondbacks have actually scored the most runs in baseball since the start of 2024.
Okay.
Which is not particularly helpful for 2026, but is not helpful. It really is amazing this team didn't make the playoffs last year. I mean, this lineup was just so dangerous, top to bottom. The pitching is what sank them. I really don't love, to be honest with you, the bottom half of the lineup is worse than I thought it would look. When you go Haven Smith, Nolan Arenado, Carlos Santana, Jordan Lawler, Alec Thomas, you know, like is that a top five lineup? Doesn't feel like it. But again, it's Perdomo, Marte, Carroll at the top. And that makes me feel really good.
I'm like the biggest Gabby Moreno fan. Perdomo, Marte, Carroll, as you said, is awesome. But again, we're going down from no Gino, no Naylor that was really powering them for a lot of last year. I don't love Corbin Carroll coming back from the hamate. At least for the start of the season, that worries me a little bit. I'm in on Arenado, at least as kind of a a solid presence, if not an impact guy. But I agree the bottom is a little bit sketchy. But hey, maybe like Ryan Waldschmidt shows up and hits a bunch of home runs. So sure. You got the ballpark going for you. You got that top three is elite. So I was not as in, not this end, but they were going to come off the board pretty soon
here. Yeah.
All right. My next pick is one that has certainly probably fallen down boards in the last few weeks because of some injuries. But I'm doing it. Sorry, Jake. I'm taking the Baltimore Orioles. I'm taking the O's. I know Jackson Holliday. He's got his own hamate injury. We got Westberg's out now. We're going to see a lot of Coby Mayo. But again, this is why you sign Pete Alonso, because that dude's going to show up and he's going to hit. That's why you trade for Taylor Ward, because that dude's going to show up and he's going to hit. Maybe Adley will hit too. I like Dylan Beavers. Maybe Blaze Alexander. He's been crushing the ball in spring training. Maybe not. Bisaio, full year of Bisaio. We think he's pretty good. So, yeah, I assumed you'd be taking the Orioles here at some point. So I feel pretty good about getting Baltimore here. Those injuries do worry me a little bit. I have to imagine, like, if Holliday and Westberg were not injured and we're both hitting 600 in the Grapefruit League, they probably have gone, what, three picks ago?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
But those are two big. Okay. Those are two big names. I mean, those are important pieces. Like, that's not Joe and Schmuck.
Holiday's a weird one. Like, it wasn't a bad season last year, but it wasn't. Like, you go back and you look at what he was. It was not awesome, but he is an important part of the team and helps them score runs more than he. You know, I'd still rather him be playing than not playing.
Sure.
I'm just saying. Westberg, though, he's really good.
So big deal. Holiday is one of the more interesting characters to me this season because we're so quick to crumble up the fallen prospect and discard them to the waste bin of our minds when they do not dance for us immediately. And Jackson Holliday, effectively, he's been in the big leagues for two seasons and has been underwhelming compared to the expectations. Now, he's 12 years old still, right? Like, he is at an age where a lot of players are still on prospect lists. He is 22. It could take even another year before he goes bananas. But every season that he doesn't do the thing, it worries you that he's never going to reach that ceiling. You know what I mean? Because it's not as if he's 100%. Not physically mature, right? It's not like, oh, once Jackson Holliday adds some strength, it's like, no, like if you stand next to Jackson Holliday, he built like a 8-year big leaguer.
Yeah, and that's also the difference between him and his brother, Ethan, who certainly has a lot more risk associated with his game, but he's the one where it's like, if he does figure it all out, he's going to be a complete monster because he's just much more physically imposing.
I group Holiday with Jackson Chourio in my mind in that way, where, I mean, part of it is because they came up at the same time, and they were what, probably the top two prospects in that class when they debuted. And for Chourio, he's tantalized and he's been better than Holiday, but he hasn't gone full supersonic, right? We haven't seen seven wins Jackson Chourio. We haven't seen all-star Jackson Chourio. But Jackson Chourio has been better, like a way more valuable player than Jackson Holiday. And so I'm curious. They occupy a similar space in my head.
Quickly, couple more Orioles things, and then we'll go back to you for the ninth overall pick here. Obviously, last year was a catastrophe for Baltimore for a lot of reasons, right?
Yeah.
24th in runs per game last year. And to get at the point about these injuries, I stand by the fact that Jackson Holliday did not have an awesome season, 95 OPS plus whatever. He scored 70 runs last season, which was second on the team.
That's wild.
And Jordan Westberg was third on the team, and he played 85 games. He scored 59 runs. Okay, so that kind of speaks just to how bad it was last year in Baltimore on the offensive side. A lot of injuries, a lot of disappointing performances. So I have to imagine, we know they're going to be much better than that for a lot of reasons, but I am feeling good about this Baltimore pick right now. But we send it back to you for your fifth pick, the ninth overall pick in the lineup draft. Go ahead.
I am going to take the Philadelphia Phillies. Mm-hmm. The Phillies were underwhelming in 2020 5 offensively, and they still finished 8th in baseball in runs. Now that President of Baseball Operations Dave Dombrowski has successfully negged Bryce Harper into trying harder, perhaps that will help the Phillies rank higher in 2026. This lineup has some very big question marks down at the bottom. Justin Crawford could be pretty much anything at this point. He is not remotely proven that he can lift the ball in the upper minors. JT Realmuto is 35. Adolis Garcia was bad enough that he got non-tendered. Is Brandon Marsh a platoon player? Is Alec Bohm a four-hitter? All of those things are valid questions, but you're still rolling out Trey Bryce and Kyle Schwarber at the top of the lineup. And so for where we're at in the draft, I feel good taking them here with the 9th overall selection.
Yeah, that's totally valid. Again, kind of similar to Arizona. It's like those top three, Turner, Schwarber, Harper, like, hell yeah. Love it. Great. And then you're kind of like, ooh.
And once Nick Castellanos gets rolling.
Well, right. No more Castellanos. Love that for the Phillies. But what is Adolis Garcia? He has also been terrible for the last 2 years. So we will find out. Okay, next up, I'm going to take the Toronto Blue Jays. Obviously, you lose Bo Bichette. You don't get Kyle Tucker, but you bring in Okamoto. You still have Vladdy. Is George Springer going to be as good as he was last year?
Yeah. Quickly, Okamoto has looked pretty fun in spring.
Very, very in on Okamoto. I am worried about this outfield. I don't really know how else to say it. I just, as fun as it was watching Nathan Lucas hit second in the World Series, I'm just not feeling awesome about that as plan A. I know you got Varsho. You have Jesus Sanchez now. I'm not particularly feeling awesome about that either. I love Bo. I think they're going to miss him. How is Barger going to handle, you know, full-time reps? I don't know. I still think the floor for this offense is pretty high. And hey, trust in David Popkins. Or was Hunter Mentz the secret sauce all along? He departs, is now over in San Francisco. We're going to find out how good Pop really is. I think that's going to be interesting. But okay, so we have both taken 5 teams so far. Jake has selected the Dodgers, A's, Mets, D-backs, Phillies. I have gone with the Yankees, Cubs, Braves, Orioles, Blue Jays. Are we looking at the 10? Are we looking? No. Well, maybe later, but not yet. Are we looking at the 10 best offenses in baseball in 2026? Or at least the 10 most runs? Probably not. Probably not. All right, let's do a few more picks before we take a break here. We send it back to you for the 11th overall selection. Who you got?
If they played anywhere else, the Seattle Mariners would have gone already. And yet they don't. They don't play anywhere else. They play in the thick-aired savanna, the endless expanse that is T-Mobile Park. Yet when you look at the lineup and you think of the names, this is probably, and if you adjust for the park, right? It's probably a top 5 offense in the sport. Certainly was last year. Now they have a full season of Josh Naylor. They have Brendan Donovan hitting atop the lineup. Dominic Canzone is way better than you think. Julio Rodriguez, despite being one of the best center fielders of the decade, still hasn't really put it all together for an entire season. He's going to do it at some point, right? Like I really do believe that we're going to get like a 9-win Julio season. That's before he retires. Mm-hmm. Now the argument against the Mariners weirdly is this: Cal Raleigh is not hitting 60 home runs again.
I don't think so. Probably not. How many?
I'll take the under.
Still a lot. I'll take the under on 60. Now, how many runs did Cal score last year? Let's see. Cal scored
60.
110. At least 60. 110 runs scored. Julio, 106. Randy Arozarena, you haven't mentioned him yet. He won't be hitting leadoff anymore. He scored 95 runs. So, I was probably taking the Mariners next, but Listen, the park is not any easier to hit in. I know Josh Naylor has no problem hitting there, but basically everyone else is a lot worse at home. So I had to factor that in, but it did kind of hurt me to leave them that long.
If you remove Cal, let's just like take the best catcher in the world and just put him to the side for a second. I think the additions and subtractions here kind of do even out. If you're talking Gino and Polanco going out, half a season of Naylor and Brendan Donovan, right? I think that is pretty even, but then you just have to round down on what you're getting from Cal. But maybe, you know, that balances out with Julio going totally bonkers. So I think there is a lot of upside here. And if you believe in Cole Emerson and you think if Victor Robles can be healthy all season, JP Crawford is not very good. The Mariners are the team that could end up in the top three again that like fell out of it.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, they are, I don't know. Again, they're going to look way better by park adjusted, but I think it's a good lineup. I think they're going to score enough runs to like win the division, but in the lineup draft, wish I could take them earlier. All right. Now it's getting really interesting. Okay. So if you look at the projections in terms of just like Fangraphs, Pecota, like who's the next best offense, most runs scored, it's a team that I do not want to take yet. But I'm not going to say who that is. There is a team that we are very blatantly just like completely ignoring so far. And how long are we going to ignore them? And I think I'm going to just take them here. All right, I'll just do it. Brewers. I don't know how they're scoring runs, but they are. Again, this is not an ex-slug draft, which I'm sure they will suck at again. But they were third in baseball in runs per game last year. They project to be in like the 21 to 22 range again this year. The team is basically the same, right? It's just now it's Andrew Vaughn instead of Rhys Hoskins and, you know, Renjifo's in there. I'll take a step forward from Churio. I'll take Contreras having even a better season than he did last year when he was kind of down from the year before. And this is one where it's just like the floor I'm still taking is higher. They've proven that however they're doing it, they will score runs and probably be good at baseball. So I don't love it. There's definitely more fun picks I've left on the board. Hopefully I'll still be able to get those, but I will take the Brewers here with pick 12.
I will make the argument against it, and here's why. Mm-hmm. I'm taking the under offensively for most of these guys based upon where they were at last year. Like I'm taking the under on Sal Frelick 111 OPS plus. I'm taking the under on Yelich 121, taking the under on Bryce Terang 121. I'm taking the under on Andrew Vaughn 141. I'm taking the under on Jake Bowers 111. I would take the under on who's ever replacing Caleb Durbin at 101.
Right, Durbin and Collins not there anymore, right? So there are some differences. It's true. They've subtracted.
I get it. I get you have the bump from Contreras and you have a bump from Churio, maybe. But I just this was a team. This was a don't draft for me.
Yeah, no, that's totally valid. It was kind of a cop-out pick just because so we'll see if that person. Okay, so let's go back to you because I think this is a very interesting range of teams that I'm shuffling here. So who you got?
Yeah, I think let's each do one more and we'll take a break.
Yep.
Wow, I really don't feel good. But
it's so funny. Well, you weren't going to take the Brewers. Okay, so who are you going to take then?
I'm going to take the Houston Astros.
Okay. Yep.
If Yordan Alvarez is healthy, he's a top five hitter in the world. That's kind of it.
Yeah. Yeah. If. Quite the if.
Quite an if.
Astros. Whew, man. Go ahead. Make the case. Make the case beyond Yordan because that is too big of an if to be your only case.
So they were really bad at hitting last year. They were really bad. 21st. They were like where they finished 21st in runs. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the argument for is Altuve bounce back, full season of Correa. Jeremy Peña is a good player. they like someone gets hurt and so they play Isak Paredes regularly like they should be doing. Christian Walker is not declining. He just had a down year. Yiner Diaz is better than he was. I think Zach Cole is like pretty good.
They're
Cam
in on
Smith
it.
Smith puts it together.
They certainly believe in him.
They're Cam Smith. Anyway, I feel excited about the Houston Astros? No. I do not feel good about this lineup. But I think here compared to where we're at in the draft, I'm happy taking the team that employs Yordan Alvarez.
That's totally fair.
I think that's defensible.
Both Fangraphs and Pecota both have them as a top 10 offense. So I get it. All I'll say is I'm much more excited to take them in our pitching draft. I will definitely say that. All right. I am going to finish off this first segment. Oh my gosh. All right. I'm between three teams right now. And I am going to go ahead with the one that I'm going to be rooting for the most. And that is the Kansas City Royals. I am taking the Royals. I will take the moving the fences in. This team was 26th in runs last year. So like this is with, they haven't really changed the lineup that much. Right. So I'm kind of banking on the fences making a pretty serious difference, which is maybe stupid if we're really just talking
they
about
were
a handful of homers a year.
26th with Bobby Witt being Bobby Witt. And an enormous Michael Garcia year, and Vinny was really good. So you're banking on like Carter Jensen is the real deal, and the Isaac Collins
is not the worst hitter in the league. Yep. So
sure,
I'm excited to watch this team. We'll see how it goes. Again, projection systems both have them in this range, so I don't think it's outrageous, but this could certainly look silly. Like. It would not shock me at all if this team is still a bottom 10 offense whatsoever, because there's no depth at all. There's like really no depth at all. There's nothing. There's no awesome hitter waiting coming from Omaha. Like this is the team. If there's a serious injury to any of those top few, it's going to be bad. But I'm excited to watch this team, so I will take them. All right, we have selected 14 teams. We're going to take a break. 16 lineups remain. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbecue.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's just keep rolling on the draft. You took Kansas City Royals at 14, and I at 15 will take the Boston Red Sox. That was, I assume, one of the teams that you were thinking about.
They were in that group. All right, so go ahead. Why this is a fun one because there's a lot of things telling you that this offense is going to be a lot worse than last year, some of which are very obvious, some of which are maybe a little bit more subtle, but there's also reasons for excitement. So I totally get it. I think that this is one with real upside, but what do you got on Boston?
I'm going to disparage Alex Bregman.
Hell yeah.
Not really. But Alex Bregman was hurt for 2 months last year. He missed like 50 games. He played 114 games last year, had 495 plate appearances, and they finished in the top 10. So he's out the door, right? And so then what are you swapping in and what are you swapping out? I think you can make an argument that swapping in a full year of Roman Anthony for Alex Bregman evens out, right?
Sure. Yep.
You're adding in Wilson Contreras, who is a high floor player. Jarren Duran just needs to be the same mediocre player he was a year ago. He was a little above. He was better than that. Like in my mind, I think the Jarren Duran was like a bum last year. Like he's still a 114 OPS plus guy. Granted, down the second half, like it was a bad at bat. Like he was out of his depth often. I would take the under on Carlos Narvaez being that good again, but they're probably not going to have to play Christian Campbell for 2 months where he doesn't know how to hit at all. I think Caleb Durbin gives them a higher floor. I'm kind of talking myself into the Red Sox the more that I think about it. Like, maybe Willie Abreu is healthier. You know, Red Sox people I saw when I went to their camp told me that Masataka Yoshida is moving well. So that's, it's good to be moving
changes
well.
Everything.
Changes everything.
Still on the team.
I don't know.
Still on the team.
I think I would have taken them higher.
This is a totally good pick. More importantly, for the purposes of this podcast, it is a perfect transition to my next pick. The San Francisco Giants, who employ a player that you did not mention. His name is Rafael Devers, who is not on the Red Sox anymore. He is on the Giants. And while the ballpark factor here is a pretty big reason why I, too, would take the Red Sox before I take the Giants, I am still kind of buying in that this Giants team is not going to stink. And Pakoda's a lot more bullish on their offense than Fangraphs, but, and I know this spring we've already had a couple minor injuries here and there. I mentioned Hunter Mentz earlier. I'm the biggest Devers fan in the world. And Arise is like, okay, maybe his OPS plus won't be pretty, but I think he can help this team score some runs if deployed in the right situation. So I don't know, man. The Giants are a weird one. They're certainly a wild card team here. Maybe not literally, but although I'm really struggling with the National League wild card picture, to be honest. So we will see. But right now I'm strictly focused on this lineup, this team's ability to score runs. And this team has Rafael Devers and the Red Sox don't. And I feel great about getting him here, actually. So San Francisco Giants. Happy to take him. This I actually feel great about this. And now I'm very excited to see where you go from here, because this is where my board super opens up. And I could panic and make a very strange decision here in the next few minutes, but I'll send it back to you. Well, let's see where you go.
I'll take the Detroit Tigers here.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The Detroit Tigers, before they commenced the peeing of the pants in early August, were a top five, top 10 offense in the league. And now, granted, some of that was driven by a lot of batted ball luck. And when you dug into their strikeout rate and their walk rate, there are reasons to believe that regression was a coming. But I still think this could be a top half offense. I am not high on Torkelson. I am not that high on Glaber or Riley Green. But those are three at least like competent hitters. Like, these guys definitely don't stink. I think Carey Carpenter is super underrated. And then if you're going to buy the McGonagall hype and he comes up at some point this year and is a kind of maybe what like Roman Anthony was a year ago, you can understand how the Tigers end up giving me value at this pick.
I think that's totally reasonable. They were in the mix for me, and McGonagall's a big part of that, right? Because otherwise you're really looking at the same team that was just a miserable offensive watch for the last 2 months and into October. And so there's a lot of real talent there. And Carey Carpenter. And I mean, in the postseason, the only guys that were hitting were Carey Carpenter and Glaber and like Javi Baez. That was really who was hitting. But that young group, I just wrote about it for our 26 and under series. Like, man, was it brutal just for the second half and into the postseason. So, but I still agree that like these are good players. And, you know, last year, even with that, they were 11th. You know, a lot of that was how awesome they were for the first few months. But they were 11th in runs last year. So totally reasonable pick. I was definitely going to probably take them here soon. I am now going to take a pick. This is probably the one I feel the worst about, but I'm going to do it. I still think it's a pretty high floor. It's the San Diego Padres. This is one that had...
That was a no draft. That was a no draft.
I know your way out on that. This is me... giving them love for Miguel Andujar, who I love. Really what this is just like Jackson Merrill's going to be healthy and awesome. And they just didn't have a Jackson Merrill fully actualized last year. So this is really a bet on him just kind of returning to, you know, top 35 player in baseball, which he obviously was not last year with all the injuries he was dealing with. I think Tatis is still awesome. I think, you know, Bogaerts, Cronenworth was like sneaky solid last year. I'm not feeling awesome about the Padres for the postseason, but as far as just like getting a floor of runs scored, I'm not excited about it the way that I am about the previous few picks that I've made. But for the purposes of trying to win this draft that is very important to me, I'm going to take the Padres here and I am going to move on.
I'm going to do the same exact thing. I'm going to take the American League version of the Padres lineup and take the Texas Rangers. And that comparison is because you look at the names on the roster and you say to yourself, it's a good looking lineup. These guys are, this is a good group. And then you look at how they played last year and it doesn't compute, right? Like the Padres a year ago should not have been as bad of a lineup as they were. Same thing is true with the Rangers. At this point in the draft, Jordan, you are sifting through a haystack of ifs. You're building your home on ifs, right? It is an if fest. And so you're really just looking at which if makes you feel the best. And the Rangers if is if Corey Seager plays 140 games, which he won't. If Jake Berger can bounce back, if Evan Carter and Josh Young can stay on the field, if Josh Smith can do that again. I don't have any if about Danny Jansen. He's going to have a 97 OPS plus. If Wyatt Langford takes a big step forward, if Jack Peterson's not 0 for 50 at some point during the year, these are ifs that I can feel okay about. I'm buying the Skip Schumacher revival, and I'm buying this lineup more than any of the ones that are left on the board.
All right. I see some of the parallels with San Diego, but...
The difference is that San Diego, the top of San Diego's lineup is way more bankable than the top of Texas's lineup. The difference is I think Texas could have more depth than San Diego.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. Both teams are in pretty serious pitcher's parks. The degree to which Globe Life Field has played like a pitcher's park recently is fascinating.
Fascinating.
But that's fine.
Didn't feel that way for the college teams this weekend.
Yeah, that's true. Right. Will Gasparino does not believe that that is a pitcher's park. All right. This is now a fun kind of meta game where I know there's some teams here that I know you're not taking. So I can just wait. You know the one I'm looking at.
Interesting.
Because of
you
that,
you know the
I'm
team I'm
hope-
not taking. The team you know I'm not taking. I might take them just to foil
ahead. I'll test you here. I'll test you here. And I won't take that team. And instead, I will take... Again, in terms of like most fun to root for, there's a pretty clear pick here. And I think I'm just going to do it. Having fun.
Do you want to say it was just left on the board?
Yeah, I'll say it was left. All right. Here's who the teams that are remaining. I'll go alphabetical. The Angels are available.
Sure.
Were you excited to take Angels? They hit a lot of home runs. Don't score a lot of runs. That's a great example. If we were doing a homer draft, that'd be different. Angels on the board. Cardinals on the board. Guardians on the board. Nationals on the board. Marlins on the board. Twins on the board. Pirates on the board. Reds on the board. Rockies on the board. Rays on the board. White Sox.
Okay.
On the board. Jake, I'm doing it. I'm taking the worst offense in baseball, who have completely overhauled their lineup. With however many new hitters and maybe Connor Griffin, Pittsburgh Pirates. I don't think they are going to be the whatever number offense that this is that I'm taking them here. But boy, would that be fun if they were, because I imagine we're going to be taking them a lot earlier in the pitching draft. And I'm excited to root for this. So Pittsburgh Pirates is my pick. Disrespecting these other teams like crazy.
You're taking them 20th overall. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a sad indicator of where the Pirates are, where you're like, oh man, like I think I'm taking them too high at 20. And I'm supposed to believe that the Pirates are going to make some noise in the wild card? I don't know. It's just...
Yeah. No, it's true. It's a tough one. But again, a lot of new players. Okay.
Are they good?
Connor Griffin. I don't know. We're going to find out. They can't be worse. They cannot be worse than last year. All right. Just to recap, 11 to 20. Jake taking the Mariners, Astros, Red Sox, Tigers, Rangers. I have taken Brewers, Royals, Giants, Padres, Pirates. 10 teams remain.
You know what's interesting?
Go ahead. Yeah.
I've taken 5 straight American League teams because I'm American. Interesting. Maybe why.
All right. Are you going to take another one?
No. I'm going to take the Cincinnati Reds.
Oh, I tried to float them to my next pick, but I spoiled it. I said, oh, Jake will never take the Reds. He couldn't possibly take the Reds. I'll be able to get them with the next one. I could get the Pirates and the Reds, and I will be feeling great because I know Jake would never want to be associated with the Reds. But there they are. There they are.
Yeah, for those of you watching on YouTube, I like an old school dork, I wrote them down on a piece of paper. And if you look here, Jordan, I was taking them anyway. They were the team kind of just like clearly on their own in this tier. And I already besmirched them by waiting this long in my mind. Like I have properly disrespected the Reds already. And so that's why I'm comfortable taking them. And let me be clear. I am not really taking the Reds. I'm taking where they play. I'm taking the ballpark.
It's fine.
More than I'm
totally
taking
valid.
The Reds.
Part of the package.
I think it's a good pick at this point.
That is a great pick at this point. I am, just to make sure I don't get my Ohio driver's license taken away, I'm going to take the Guardians here. The Guardians were 28th in offense last year. And I mean, here's the thing. They were a worse offense than the Tigers last year, for sure. But both teams were just like, you know what? We don't want to pay for offense. We'll just, our kids will be better next year. I promise. Don't worry, they'll be better next time. And Rhys Hoskins is here now. The Guardians are not going to be a good offense. I do think it will be better than last year. I trust in Chase DeLauder. Travis Pizzano will show up at some point. And this is another one that you probably weren't going to take for a while, so that's fine. But I'm not liking any of these picks left, although this will be interesting to see who you go with next. So Cleveland on the board. Let's see it. I would love to see them score more runs this year.
Okay, so that was pick, I believe, number 22 of this draft.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
With the 24th pick, I'm going to take the Washington Nationals.
23rd.
Here's my thing.
23rd.
23rd. 23rd. Sorry, pick. Really good job, yes. Jake.
20, good job 24 comes after 23, comes after 22.
After 23, what you comes got? After 22. Thank you.
Yep.
Washington Nationals. The Nats finished 20th last year in runs, and now they have real coaches.
How about that?
That's kind of the argument. Like, who's going to be worse than they were last year on the Nats?
Yeah, to me, it's more about you're buying the youth. You're saying these young players are going to get better, not worse. That's fine.
They were bad. Like it was a bad, it was a bad lineup, right?
Yeah.
But I think you could, if James Wood does that again, that's a good player. CJ Abrams, for all of his flaws, is a solid player. I am irrationally high on Dylan Cruz. And then you're just hoping that some of these, like you said, these young, you take a step forward. And I just don't see with this new leadership group, with the new coaching staff, I don't see it going backwards. The way that the Nats are worse is if they just trade dudes away and they embrace the suck in the second half and like CJ Abrams is gone and this team doesn't have any veterans anyway and Luis Garcia is gone. Like the bottom falling out makes them really bad. But for where we're at in the draft, I'm fine with this pick.
Totally fine. Projection systems have them in the bottom three, again, comfortably, as do the projection systems have my next pick. However, with the vibes, I'm going for it. This could super backfire, but I'm taking the fighting fish. I'm going with the Marlins. A lot of young players. I'm excited to see what they do this year. Some guys, maybe more of a full season. Obviously, some new guys like Owen Casey. Stowers, can he do it for a full season? Augustin Ramirez, I don't care how bad of a catcher he is, I think he's going to help them score runs. Jacob Marcy, you know, a full year of him. So this one could be bad. The Marlins last year were, but this is the one that's interesting, right? Because they're also in the version of the Brewers. I know it sounds weird. The Marlins were 16th in runs scored last year. Okay. Like they were not, they somehow were an average offense. If they end up there again, I'm obviously feeling great about this pick. But there is also, this could still be quite a bad team just because of how much youth and experience. Some of these approaches are very aggressive, could get exposed. If it goes wrong, it could be pretty ugly, but I'll go with the fish here.
I will take the Tampa Bay Rays now. Now, the Rays' offensive output last year was very park-related. They were playing at the Stein at George Steinbrenner Field, which was a bit of a bandbox. And as they are moving back to the Trop, I'm sure that will dampen some of their numbers. The thing about Tampa, though, okay, is that the floor for this franchise is always super high. They have not sucked in a long time. Now, maybe they do this year. They seem to be taking a half step backwards, but they still have Junior Caminero, who is like, could totally be a top 10 hitter in baseball. They signed Cedric Mullins to raise the floor. They traded for Gavin Lux to raise the floor. Yandy Diaz and Jonathan Aranda are still good hitters. I think this lineup could finish 21st, and that's fine.
Yeah, I hear you. It's a very, very different team. Lau gone, Lowe gone, Mangum gone, Morel gone, Caballero, Jansen, yep. Cameron Meisner got 200 plate appearances last year. He's not on the team anymore. So maybe that's a good thing. I think you're forgetting how much of a pitcher's park the Trop is. And not even just that the Stein was hitter friendly. The Trop is not fun to hit in. And that alone made them kind of a do not draft. But I get it. I do agree the floor is probably higher than some of these other teams. And I'm just going to pick another team that I want to see score runs this year, even though they might still be terrible, and that is the Chicago White Sox. Let's do it. Let's get crazy. This could still be quite bad, folks. But a lot of young players that showed up and hit well in the second half. Obviously, Colson Montgomery, but Kyle Teal and Caro. Murakami, who knows? But also some floor-raising guys. You know, they signed Austin Hayes. I think that'll help. So I don't know. Again, I'm more excited about them than the other teams on the board here. But now I'm very curious. We are officially in Rocky's range, I think. Or have we arrived? The only teams remaining are the Twins, Rockies, Angels, and Cardinals. Go ahead, Jake Mintz.
I'm going to take the Twins here. They are the least bad option. I think they have a higher, they're like clearly trying to win, at least for in the first half for some reason, and I think that is a separator here from these other three teams.
Like it's a difference. Projection systems have the Twins as like the 17th 18th best offense in baseball, which again still surprised me, but there are some good players that are still playing for the Twins somehow. Obviously Buxton, Kiesel, if he's healthy for a full season, that helps. So, again, the vibes, I just couldn't possibly go with Minnesota.
And the ifs.
But you know what?
Sure, the ifs. Yeah. But the ifs here are similar to the Rangers' ifs, where it's just like you're just asking for a clean bill of health from all these guys that are perpetually hurt.
Yeah, that's true. All right, you know what? They are basically projected as the worst offense, certainly by Pecota. But in the spirit of the Twins, I think I'm going to take the Cardinals.
Yeah, that's right. Pick.
I'm going to take the Cardinals. I know that, you know, you trade away is going to be a very different group, but I don't know. Like, these guys aren't that bad. Like, these players are not. I don't think they're going to be. I think I'm more worried about what's happening on the mound for them, I would say, in terms of why they're going to lose a lot of games in 2026. So, because of that, like, I'm not thinking they're going to be any sort of, you know, juggernaut, but I will happily leave the Rockies and Angels, and now I realize you're definitely going to take the Rockies, which, but maybe I'm wrong. Are you still going with the Angels here? What do you got?
So the thing about the 2025 Rockies that is legitimately incredible is that despite playing in Coors Field, they finished 29th in runs. That is so hard to do. That is so, you have to be so bad at hitting to score that few runs.
They were so bad.
And they were two teams. Two teams, the Rockies and Pirates, finished under 600 runs. Okay. Mm-hmm. The team in 28th, right above the Rockies, was Cleveland at 643. So, like, they were second to last by quite a margin. And for that reason, I'm going to take the Angels.
Take the Angels. All right.
Look, I'm choosing between a poop waterfall and a, you know, year spent in the dumpster. I'm choosing between stubbing my toe and hitting my funny bone. I'm choosing between doing my taxes and doing your taxes. This is not a fun if or. I just think the Rockies really suck, dude. I think they really suck.
They do. They're bad. They're bad. What about their, you know, I guess same manager, but maybe they have some new coaches that can help them out just to really underscore how horrible they were offensively, right? So
is this Zach Veen? Is this Zach Veen slander? Is this Jack Veen?
Probably
slander.
I don't know. I mean, you know, whatever. Troy Johnston, Blaine Crim, Hunter Goodman. The Rockies last year were 12th in baseball in runs at home. And they were last on the road by 41 runs. So you mentioned that the Pirates were the only other team down there. The Pirates were 29th at home and 29th on the road. The Rockies, we know they're going to score runs at home. So I'm kind of loving this because I know they're still going to score runs at home. That's just what happens. If we can get that away offense to like 27th, I am feeling good about this 30th pick. But if not,
it's not a pick.
That's also fine.
You didn't pick them.
No, I didn't pick them. They picked me.
You were saddled.
I picked them when I picked second is really what happened.
Right.
Okay. All right. To recap, finally, our final picks, the bottom 10. Jake taking the Reds, Nats, Rays, Twins, and Angels were his final five picks. I took the Guardians, Marlins, White Sox, Cardinals, and Rockies. We will put together our full squads, and we will track them all season long. Later this week, we will draft pitching staffs. That is going to be very different. Well, I can imagine the Rockies don't have any better chance of not finishing 30th, but we will get 30? There when we get
there. Did they go 30?
We will figure it out. I'm pretty sure they will. All right. We're going to take a break. When we return, a couple quick topics before we say goodbye. We'll be right back on Baseball Podcast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's wrap this thing up and go around the league. Had some interesting news coming out of the 314 for those of you that have never lived in St. Louis, Missouri. That is the area code for St. Louis, Missouri. The St. Louis Cardinals extending their manager, Ollie Marmol, through the 2028 season. Now, this is interesting because the Cardinals have been shockingly mediocre for their standards under Marmol the last number of years. He has been on the hot seat seemingly for the last two seasons and certainly was entering the hot seat this season. And yet the Cardinals give him their blessing to more or less guide this team through the rebuild part. Which will be the next two seasons. This, you know, the Cardinals under Chaim Bloom are taking a half step back to reload, and Ollie Marmol will be there for at least some of that. Jordan, what do you make of the Cardinals' decision to give Ollie an extension? We often see teams give a manager an extension just to not have the lame duck status clouding them all season long. This happened with Bob Melvin, right, where he got an extension in the middle of the season from the Giants and they fire him 2 months later. Just because Ollie got this extension does not mean he is going to be there for the entirety of the contract. But it is, it does say something that they have chosen to keep him around.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just a really strange tenure, right? He takes over in 22 and they win the division. That's the last time they were in the postseason. And then since then, 71 wins, 83 wins, 78 wins. How much does Ollie Marmol have to do with that? I don't know. Probably not much when you really consider just how this roster kind of just slowly disintegrated around the core that was still capable of winning when they made the postseason four straight years from 19 to 22. That said, I do think that the lame duck thing is real. And I think that it, especially with the new regime, it was going to be something that was going to be asked over and over. As you mentioned, I don't think it guarantees him anything. But I do have to imagine it probably indicates that he has made a good enough impression on the new folks in charge and maybe some of the new coaches that it's like, let's keep this in place. And I also think it's important that they probably believe that a lot of the players, they're, you know, yes, he's gotten rid of, they've obviously gotten rid of all these veterans that we've come to associate with the Cardinals when they were winning, whether it was an Arenado and now obviously Goldschmidt long gone and Contreras and some of these other guys, Donovan. But maybe this tells me that Ollie's standing with that next wave of players, some of which we've seen in the majors, maybe some of which that we've yet to see, like the Weatherholtz of the world. But I'm talking about a Gorman and a Walker and a Nootbaar and Victor Scott and some of those guys. Maybe there is a sense internally that, like, as those guys are trying to now prove themselves as major leaguers, that Ollie can be the right guy to be in place there. So from that sense, I think it probably makes some sense. But at the same time, this is also probably would have been a tough, you could even imagine like next year maybe being a tough time to try and hire a new manager anyway, considering where the Cardinals are at.
Yeah.
But we'll see. This one caught my attention, but I don't want to make too much of it.
Sure. I mean, there are two factors here that make me like it. Chaim Bloom spent most of 2025 evaluating the organization without running it. So he was around. He was asking people, players, front office officials around the organization for their thoughts, their opinions, evaluating processes, whatever. And so this is not him. This is not Chaim Bloom, the president of baseball operations, giving Marmol this contract to get a task off of his plate or sticking to the status quo. Bloom has shown a willingness to move on from the last number of years, whether that's trading away players or, you know, changing minor league staff, player development. And so I think he is making this decision with a lot of information, having thoroughly investigated what Ollie Marmol meant. And I think the thing about Ollie Marmol is that he is a good developer. I think that is probably his best skill in setting up a place where, like, that's his background, right, is in player development. And I think that that is what the Cardinals are going to try and do now at the big league level. And I think they just need to put a more progressive staff under Ollie. I was a little bit surprised how few changes were made underneath Ollie from last year to this year. I believe it was only a handful of coaches that were different. Maybe that changes in next year. But I look, this team's not going to be that good. And I think Ollie Marmol does a good job of making sure not everyone in the room doesn't hate one another, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's valid. I think he's just a really interesting character because he's now entering his fifth season and he's still the second youngest manager in baseball. And the only reason he's not the youngest manager in baseball is because the Nats just hired a seventh grader. Just kidding. Sorry, Blake. That wasn't very nice.
Sorry, Blake. Sorry, dog.
But yeah, you know, Blake Butera is 33. But Ollie Marmol is still 39, man. He turns 40 in July. So he's younger than Stephen Vogt and Craig Stammen and Kurt Suzuki, who just got hired, and, you know, Albernaz and Will Venable and Don Kelly, some of these other former players that just got hired recently. Like, remember, like, when Ollie got the job at first, it was like, wow, this is a young guy who is still probably trying to kind of figure out what it means to be a manager. I don't mean that to sound disrespectfully, but, you know, it's been kind of a weird time in St. Louis for him. So, but I think it's a really good point about just Bloom evaluating the organization and they didn't have to do this. It's a really simple way to put it. They did not have to do this, regardless of the lame duck thing. They did not have to do this. So I think that can tell us something.
Let's move on before we get out of here. One other topic. Shohei Ohtani is in Japan. And it's my whole timeline.
It's amazing. So I believe 2 or 3 days ago, Ohtani and the other Japanese MLB stars departed their respective spring training camps to travel across the globe to join Samurai Japan for a series of exhibitions. I don't believe they are like allowed to play in some of those earlier exhibitions, although I believe that they probably will participate in some of the ones coming up this week. Samurai Japan is obviously a pretty big deal, and Shohei Ohtani is obviously a pretty big deal. We saw Ohtani play in Japan, of course, during the 2023 WBC. So that happened. And then more recently with the Dodgers a year ago in Tokyo. However, when the Dodgers were in Tokyo, Shohei was not really out and about. He was not taking public transit or eating at a restaurant with his teammates. And like, he was not moving about the public with the rest of his team the way that he seemingly has been for the last few days, which has resulted in just an unbelievable amount of video from every possible angle at all these random restaurants all over Japan, wherever Samurai Japan is walking. And you mentioned the timeline, like, this is kind of this hilarious part of about just the time zones, which is I'm waking up and my whole timeline is just whatever has happened while I was sleeping, which is whatever Samurai Japan has been up to. And you just see, okay, here's Ohtani leaving the restaurant from this angle. And here's the best part, Murakami getting off the train from this angle. But it's all Ohtani.
It's here's Will Ireton getting off the train from this angle. Oh, and there's Ohtani getting off the train from this angle. And then there's
it's also
the bald Dodger security guy.
Ohtani is the only one with multiple security people essentially flanking him the whole time. Pretty much everyone else is just moving about their business. We also had footage of him taking BP before one of their scrimmages the other day. He did not play in that game. But full stadium, a stadium filled for BP is kind of not something you really see. Like, I'm trying to think of when you see that. I guess like before the home run derby. Like, it's just not a scene that you really ever get.
But before the home run derby, it's not filled behind home plate, you know?
Right, right. So that image and just watching those and watching the Chunichi Dragon just like freak out at Shohei taking BP. And listen, Pete, you could roll your eyes at it. I was doing the same thing. When Ohtani hit on field in Toronto, I think before the World Series started. Because it's very well known. Ohtani does not hit on the field very often during the season. He's done it more recently, but he knew I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go hit the ball as far as I can. And he understands the assignment, which is great. So I cannot wait. Japan's first game is at 5 a.m. Eastern on Friday. I believe we will be podcasting after that, but we will see how the schedule lines up. But it's just, it can't be, it's absurd. He's in his own universe, and I'm loving every second of it, and I'm thousands and thousands of miles away. So it's great. Shouts out to Shohei. What a thing.
Shouts out to Shohei Ohtani, good baseball player.
That was fun. That was a fun little game we did, and I'm excited to do it again. But we don't want the runs. We don't want the runs later this week. Mm-mm. We'll be drafting pitching staffs next episode. But we will see how this lineup draft turned out. And let us know. Email us, baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. Do you think Jake is ridiculous for taking the A's third? Do you think
probably
I am ridiculous for taking the Guardians 24th or whatever? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. Shouts out to TJ Brassel and Andrew Hartz for producing this episode of Baseball Barbecast. And we'll be back later this week. Thank you all for listening. Peace.